You know, I guess I think I've always been a professional critic, you know, or some sort of professional appreciator or something.
Now, this is serious business here, man. Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
Khalees, the girl who brought all the boys to the yard with her milkshake, has expanded her culinary repertoire. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. Khalees shares songs from her new album, Food. And then Greg and I review a new album from Austin, Texas indie rockers, Spoon. That's coming up on Sound Opinions. Greg, later in the show, we're going to be reviewing the eighth album from the long-running band Spoon. I think now that Sonic Youth's gone, and after Yola Tango, I would say that Spoon is the most consistent long-running band in indie rock. Indie rock as a sound rather than a label, but they've been on an indie and then onto a major and then back to the indies and now on a major. We're going to review their eighth album in a 20-year career later in the show. But first, we have some music news.
Now I'm not trying to be rude, but hey pretty girl, I'm feeling you. The way you do the things you do reminds me of my Lexus cool. That's why I'm all up in your grill, trying to get you to a hotel. You must be a football coach, the way you got me playing the field. So baby give me that and let me get that. Running her hands through my fro, bouncing on 24s. Why they saying I'm ready?
That is R. Kelly with a song called Ignition, a song that he performed on stage as a surprise cameo star with Chance the Rapper to wrap up the three-day Lollapalooza Festival in Grant Park in Chicago. Chance the Rapper, the rising hip-hop star out of Chicago, brought Kelly out to perform at one of the biggest festivals in North America. But Jim, oddly enough, Kelly is not going to be performing at a much smaller festival in a few weeks.
Yeah, this is a really fascinating story, Greg. The Fashion Meets Music Festival, taking place on Labor Day weekend in Columbus, Ohio, had booked Kelly as its headlining act. And then in response to an outcry from local music fans, from bands that were dropping off the bill, from the local public radio station, which withdrew its sponsorship, the promoters of this festival, at great cost to themselves, kicked Kelly off in response to his rather sordid past, which we've made reference to several times. Last summer was Kelly's effort to reach out to the festival crowd, the indie rock audience of America. He headlined Bonnaroo, he headlined the Pitchfork Music Festival, and he appeared on stage with Phoenix at Coachella. I had done a lot of reporting on Kelly's misdeeds, not only the trial for which he was acquitted of making child pornography, but dozens of civil lawsuits filed by underage girls who claimed improper sexual relationships with him. And I recapped that when he headlined Pitchfork. It didn't have a big impact, but it got picked up by the Village Voice last December and suddenly became part of a big national dialogue, along with troubling director Woody Allen, people asking the question, if an artist has done bad things in the past, can we continue to enjoy his or her art, especially if that art references the misdeeds? It's become a big question. Columbus said, no thanks, we don't want R. Kelly here. What do you think? Call us on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
I want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Even more than just a man. You've really been my friend. Wanna say thank you.
Thank you.
For putting me to the test. When I know you could have left me behind. When I feel like I'm knocked back off my feet. And I swear I'm all alone. You're the one who carries me. Simple thing like giving me your peace. You're strong enough to be exactly what I need.
Listening to Sound Opinions, and that's the song Breakfast, a fitting way for Khalees to open her latest album, Food. Now, the R&B singer-songwriter has been making music since her debut release in 1999, longer if you count her time at the Fame School, New York's LaGuardia High School of Music, Art, and Performing Arts. But it wasn't until 2003's breakout hit Milkshake that Khalees really brought all her fans to the yard.
That song, produced by Chad Hugo and Pharrell Williams of the Neptunes, went gold. But the next step for Khalees was surprising. She released Khalees Was Here in 2006 and then took a big break to go to culinary school. By this time, she had married rapper Nas, and in 2009, they publicly announced their split while Khalees was 7 months pregnant with their son. All of that, motherhood, family, and food, has made its way onto the new record, a very focused reinvention of sounds produced by TV on the Radio's Dave Sitek. Khalees stopped by our studio while on tour promoting food, and we started the conversation by talking about the influence of her parents.
I think I'm very clearly a product of my upbringing. You know, my father was a jazz musician and my mom was a chef, so I definitely am split straight down the center, which is kind of perfect because that's my name. My name is Khalees, which is half my dad's name and half my mom's name. So,
well, you have that line that I love: so much of who we are is from who first taught us how to love.
I realized that looking at my little one and just, you know, seeing how just who he is and how he's developing every day. He'll be 5, you know, next month, and just, you know, how funny that age is, and they're just little sponges.
Well, when you were your boy's age, you were already playing violin.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
What was that like? Do you remember any of that?
Yeah, no, I do. I played for like 14 years. So
wow.
I don't remember asking to play the violin. My mom says that I did, so I guess that's why. But I started playing the saxophone after that, and you know, I took piano lessons. I was in a musical household, so it was kind of like there were always instruments around, and my mom was like, "Well, don't play around, like learn it." So that was kind of my first memories, really, of music.
Your dad being in the jazz world, were there a lot of musicians visiting? I mean, were you kind of around that just by being there all the time?
Yeah, always. I mean, like, I grew up either on like the church floor or in like the club. It was like one or the other. I don't know how that went together, but that was my life. You know, we were either in church or we were watching my dad play somewhere, and I would be tired and I was like, well, just lay down. So me and my sisters would just all be like, you know, so the music just, you know, would lull us to sleep. It was kind of just part of our regular existence.
But your dream was Broadway, right?
Yeah, I wanted to do musical theater.
Really? So what's your favorite musical?
I think that was the issue, is that I feel like they were all done with the same kind of like connotation with them. They're all sort of like jazz hands, and I wanted to do something a little bit different. So I went to LaGuardia, you know, fame school, and I was a theater major there, but I would score all of our plays, and so it would be very dramatic pieces, but I would do these very like, you know, heart-wrenching orchestra kind of sounds. Plus, you know, they have a whole music department, so it was great.
Yeah. Well, Greg and I have had this fight with Chris Jones, the theater critic at the Tribune, right? I hate musical theater. My daughter, it's her passion, right? Because, I mean, people just
Mine
know,
too,
you know,
yeah.
That's super dramatic. You know, the blood of the martyrs, the water, right. The meadows of fraud. There's none of that. And rockers who bring that into their music, or you know, rockers, the most broad, are doomed.
Well, because I think that was the whole idea, though, that I didn't want to follow in any particular path. I wanted to sort of make my own mark. I wanted to do something that felt real and that felt beautiful and kind of, you know, romantic and emotional at the same time.
Well, we want to get deeper into food and how you got to album number 6, but maybe give us a song first.
Sure.
Tell us what you're going to play, Khalees.
Well, I guess we can play Rumble. Yeah, let's do Rumble. You
Phenomenal. Rumble by Kalis on Sound Opinions. We're here live in the studio with Kalis and a killer band, Dexter Story, Brittany Brooks, Eugene Owens, Jeff Gallegos, Sean Billings, and Nia Andrews. Now, Kalis, I've been a fan from day one. You know, I had discovered Kaleidoscope. I got the import copy of Wonderland, right? Those first two albums. And, you know, to me, it was in the midst of that great period of flowering, first real flowering in America of the neo-soul movement, you know. But, man, by the time you came up to make album number three, I don't know how you even did it because you had had such a hard ride with the music industry, right? And Wonderland didn't even come out in America.
You know what, though? It's funny because I didn't have any expectations for this. You know, this wasn't my plan anyway. So for me, it was always just, I'm just doing what it is that I'm supposed to do. You know, it wasn't ever like, I was confused why people were confused by me, so I didn't put much thought into it, you know, and so there wasn't that much battle, really. It was more like they might have been battling, but I wasn't participating.
You were just happy to make those records.
I was just like, I'm going to do what I feel like I'm supposed to do and let the chips fall where they may. You know, it's funny. People don't realize, you know, 16 years ago, the music industry was a people say that, but it really was a different world.
Doesn't exist anymore.
It does not exist anymore on any level. You know, it's like I came in the beginning of the end of something that was really spectacular in music and particularly black music here in the States. So when I put Wonderland out and everything, the whole, like, the economy, that was the beginning of the end. Everything started to just crash.
Yeah.
And so what had happened was it wasn't even so much about the music. It was just that they had fired like 320 people. And these were all the people who had signed me and who had been, you know, radio people and project. It just, like, everybody was gone.
You didn't even know who to call.
Right. And that was really that. It was more logistics than anything else.
Right.
It was just like, what to do now? You know, right. And it was like, oh, okay. But I still went on tour and I still did, you know, what it was that I thought I was supposed to do. And then I was like, well, now let's do another record. And, you know, funny because then I put out Tasty, and which actually was my biggest record. It's crazy because then L.A. Reid got fired from Arista. So it was kind of the same, but right when my record had come out. So sort of it was all kind of, I didn't take it personally, I think is the
thing. That's the thing. Tasty becomes a hit almost despite itself.
Right.
You know, you get shuffled from Arista to Jive, right? But that brings us to Milkshake.
Yeah.
You know, tell us about Milkshake.
I'm really proud of it because, you know, we did something really special in that moment. You know, I think when you look at music from that era, where it was before that record came out versus where it veered off to after, you know, without tooting my horn too much, I really do feel like we played a really specific role in the sound of where music went from that point on, you know. And so, you know, yes, it's a fun kind of like tongue-in-cheek kind of song, but the reality is that it's a smart song, you know, and it changed things. Female singers did not sound the same after that, you know, and they have not been the same since.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. We'll be right back.
wasn't about what we were saying. It was more about this is something else that we're doing. We're going to present this in a way that hip hop and R&B and all these things had not been fused like this before. It was always like you sing a hook and he'll rap, and
yeah.
And like, you know what I mean? That was what it was. That was the extent of like the forging of the two genres. Whereas this was something else. This became a whole other thing. And we fought for that record. Like that.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh my God, it's such a pop hit. Literally fought a year. It took a year for that song to break. Everyone was like, what is that? We're not playing that. What's the melody? We don't understand this. Like, people looked at me like I was crazy. And I was like, just play it. It's good. And they were like, we're not going to play it.
Well, we should interject that by we're talking about the Neptunes, the production team, yes, of Chad Hugo and Pharrell Williams. Did it start with you? Did it start with them bringing you a riff? Or how did it?
Chad was the melody guy. Pharrell's the beat guy. And I was always just kind of, I fit myself in wherever I could. We knew that we had to get back in to do another record, and we were excited, and that's what came out. That's what happened. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting because that is a forward-thinking record, and you listen to it now, it still feels very fresh. It was interesting because I interviewed Pharrell Williams and Chad Hugo right around that time, or it was actually prior to that, and they were just really starting out, and you were just starting out. I mean, you were a teenager when you started out, right?
Yeah, I was like 17.
And Pharrell and Hugo were starting to get these other jobs, and all they could talk about was working with you. That was like a really creative. And so you, on a number of levels, you guys were really innovative. Did you realize it at the time that you were sort of breaking out of the convention, or were you just too so young and naive that you didn't know any better?
I had no idea. It's funny because, yeah, like, I never had like a demo or like, you know, me and Pharrell and Chad, we sat in a studio, we recorded three songs that were actually on Kaleidoscope, and we walked them in and we played them for the record label and they were like, yes. And we were like, okay, great. And that was it. Like, it was never, we didn't have any idea. And then even when people started talking about what the records were and how, you know, they were like, but you're black. And I'm like, I know. I'm like, I didn't realize that they were, you know, they thought they were telling me something. I was like, I had no idea that anyone would ever think that this was odd, or that because I was from New York, or that I was black, or that I was a girl, or any of these things. I didn't think that any of it would play into where I fit, or if I would fit at all, you know?
Don't need no paper. Don't need no pencils. Don't need no love letters. 'Cause I just wanna get along with you. No beeper. Don't need no cellular. Go digital's better. Listen, I just wanna get along with you.
We'll have more with Khalees in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Later, we review the new album from acclaimed rockers Spoon. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and our guest this week is R&B artist Khalees. And when she released her hit single Milkshake from 2003's album Tasty, everything changed for her. She became a household name worldwide and was put in front of audiences that she never imagined. So as we pick up our conversation, I asked her to reflect on where she started with Kaleidoscope in 1999, feeling like she wasn't really a part of everything else out there.
Yeah, yeah, by that point I was on the road and I was like, you know, I'm standing out in front of, to be totally frank, like I was in, like I said, I was either in Switzerland or Berlin or something like that. And it was just like all these white kids. I think it was by that point too that people started to feed to me. And I think now I was more nervous then, I think, just because I was like, how did this happen? This wasn't my plan. Like, this wasn't my plan. You know, I think it was more just nerves. Like, how did I get here? I'm so far away from home. I'm by myself and no one looks like me. No one speaks English. This is crazy. To fast forwarding to now where that the difference is the fact that, like, I think these people have grown. You know, music was so... It was like R&B. You're a black girl, you sing R&B. You're a white girl, you sing pop. You're a white guy, you sing rock. Like that was, and those were just, everyone sort of supposed to fit in that space. And when I came out screaming, everyone was like, wait a minute, she's not supposed to do that. But no one, I'm like, well, should have said that earlier.
But you somehow avoided that curse of becoming a, you know, I'm Lindsay Lohan, you know, melting, superstar fame, pop stardom with that single. You know, how did you keep your sanity?
You know, I can't reiterate enough, growing up with jazz musicians, their driving force was never like pop stardom. You know what I mean? It's like they're in the club till 4 a.m. They just want to play. They'll play anywhere. My mom would tease my dad. He'll play for the opening of a letter. Like my dad was just so excited to play. So it wasn't about making all this money and having a video. And like, so that wasn't ever the goal.
You want to give us another song and maybe tell us what you want to play, Khalees?
Yeah. I want to sing Jerk Ribs.
But how did this song originate?
Dave Sitek and I, we were in his house, and I just remember he had this, he started playing the bass, and he started playing just this bass lick, you know, and it was just so kind of, it was enough at the time. It was just like, I'm like, that's, it's just enough. Mm. And it's funny because that wasn't supposed to be the hook, but I was in the booth and I was so excited and I was like, this is what it feels like. And he was like, that's it. And I was like, no, I was just saying. And he was like, no, just leave it. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, just leave it.
And then when do the ribs come into this?
Well, I made ribs that day.
Okay.
You know, being from New York, I'm used to all these Caribbean restaurants, but living in LA, there's like no Caribbean food. So I brought ribs to the studio that day and everyone was just like silent. And so we put it in the computer as Jerk Ribs, and I was like, can you just leave it? It's just so good.
That is a nice perk. You join Khalees' band and you get fed.
You get fed, yeah.
And you get this great music.
I try. Way down in my feet, and these moments
Jerk Ribs from Kalise and her band at Sound Opinions. Kalise Rogers, Dexter Story, Brittany Brooks, Eugene Owens, Jeff Gallegos, Sean Billings, and Nia Andrews. And man, the vibe, you know, we were starting to talk about it a little bit with Sitek in his studio. Well, actually his home, right?
Yeah.
Sounded like a really relaxed, organic, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Old school, for lack of a better term. Not somebody sitting in his room with a laptop, you know?
No, not this time.
was that
was the last album, right? Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, was that part of the reason that you wanted to work with him? Because he knew it would be kind of that kind of vibe? Or?
Well, the thing is, you know, Dave is so dope because he's so versatile. Like, you could tell him, like, hey, I want to do an opera. And he's like, okay. Like, he's so that guy for that. You can pretty much do whatever. When we started talking about even working together at all, we had no intentions of doing this kind of record. It just ended up being something else, and so we didn't fight it. We went with it.
But we're losing a couple of years, 2006 to 2010, where you decided to concentrate mainly on cooking.
Yeah.
Like Cordon Bleu. That's like going to Harvard.
I know,
to
right?
To be a doctor, right? Tell us about that and about, you know, I mean, because it's hard work. I've read, you know, Anthony Bourdain, Kitchen Confidential, the cuts and the burns and the 16 yeah. hours on your feet,
oh, no,
right?
It's true. It's intense. But I always feel like it was right after Arista having folded. I was fighting to get off of the label. You know, to be fair, I was signed to a label that would have never signed me and I would have never signed theirs. So it was just a bad marriage. You know, after I put out Kalise Was Here, I was fighting to get off for so long. When I finally got the call, they were like, hey, you've been released. And I was like, oh. You know, I hadn't made any provisions or plans for what happens when I finally get off, because it was like 4 years of me really yeah. avidly trying to get off of this, you know, out of this label. So finally, when I got off, it was the first time as an adult, I was 27, where my time didn't belong to someone and where I could actually say, you know what, I'm going to do something else. And yeah. I decided to go to culinary school, and that's not something you can do part time. So it was like, all right, well, I got to really do this. And so it was like 5 days a week, 7 hours a day, you know, in classes alone. And then you have to get a job. And so it's like, you know, I had to work on the line. And, you know, it was the best time of my life, though. Like, I miss it sometimes. Like, I get like jealous. I'm like, when I see, I'm like, what are you guys doing in there? I love it. I love the intensity of it. I love the brashness of it. I love everything about it.
The chefs are like the new rock stars, and, yeah. and all the rock stars want to be chefs, and the chefs want to be rock stars. It's what's going on? You got any insight into that?
Well, I think it's about lifestyle. Everyone's always like, you know, well, how do you, you know, you're a chef and you're, you know, an artist. And for me, it's always, when I think about my best nights, it's always like, you know, I've got great friends, there's always great fashion, great music, and hopefully there's some good food. That to me is like a night worth going out for, you know, and so I think it's like the bridging of the gap. It's just, you know, it's getting smaller and smaller because it's so easy. It's like that's where you want to be. You know, it's like you want to hear great music and you want to be able to eat and drink great wine and share. And like, that's what it should be like, I think. I think too, especially when you're living in an age of like, you know, social media and all these things, this is something that literally can, like, this is it. You have to be, if you want to know that I'm a good chef, you have to come and see me. You have to eat it. You have to touch it. You can talk about it, but it's like someone has to actually be present.
Well, that personal connection you're talking about, though, is so apparent, you know, even last night with the level of devotion with your fans. I've never seen an artist of your stature. I mean, you're talking to their fans in that way and then inviting them to talk with you afterward. And this whole overlay of social media and the fact that there is no mystery anymore, everybody's sort of on the internet all the time, Instagramming, whatever. How have you sort of negotiated that? How have you come to terms with it? Because it's a very different world.
Very badly.
Yeah.
it's a double-edged sword because on one level, my natural instinct is to like be, is, you know, like it's evil, get it away, you know, just because I feel like it does take away all the mystery. It's so narcissistic and it's so just like, you know, hi, look at me, another selfie. Wow. You know, it's annoying actually. On the flip side, I will say that there's a sick beauty to it in the sense that like there are people that I would never be able to reach. I can do shows now in like Lithuania, which I literally just did, which they would never know who I am if it had not been from the fact that social media is like buzzing and things are, you know what I mean, moving around through there. Like, how would I ever get there? So it's kind of, you have to take the good with the bad. It's hard. It is hard. I find that for me, I have to be cognizant of my my personal barriers. And I'm very, I love the people who love me, but I also don't feel indebted to them. And so I appreciate them on a naturally human sense, but I don't feel like I owe them something. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm out with my son or with my mom or my boyfriend or whatever, I have no problem being like, thank you so much, but I'm not going to take a picture right now. And you have to be okay with that.
You had a very public marriage and then a very public divorce. Was mm-hmm. that a challenge?
I think a divorce sucks no matter how you slice it. It definitely doesn't make it any easier when you've got like his fans and your fans and then they're at war and then they want a war with you and you're like, you actually don't know us.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's life. It is what it is, you know, and there are some things that as much as I do maintain a level of control with this, you know, my son is not for sale. And like, I don't feel like just because I'm in this that automatically he has to be as well. Even more than that, it's been 5 years. And I think people don't realize that either. You know, it's still very fresh for some people. Like people on my Instagram, there's like a whole like site for like, you know, we love Nas and Khalees. I'm like, well, that's nice because that was 5 years ago. And
yeah,
we are so both past that and we're good friends. And, you know, it's like everyone else should move on as well. But yeah,
you've defied attempts to categorize you and also to have a career. People don't realize, like, you know, we're talking about almost half your life and you're still a young person. You're 34 years old. Do you feel in at all in this position to role model, you know, Khalees, because not many people have gone as far as you have and still seem to be on an upward arc? Do you look at artists who are 18, 19, you know, like you were when you started out and say, if I'd only known this now, what advice would you impart to them?
There's a few things. I think it's funny, you know, again, I refer to being a mom. I realize that once they're a certain age, it's kind of like you should hope that you've done a good job up and, you know, until that point, because they're going to go on their own. For me, you know, I was 17 when I signed my first deal, and I have to credit my parents. Like, we could appreciate music, but my mom, we were never allowed to like put posters up or like be fanatical or like worship some other human being. My mom was just like, we're not having that. So that was the first thing. So I didn't even expect that back from people. So I didn't. And then I think too, that for me, it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't about the fame wasn't, I didn't realize that was an option. So I didn't yearn for that. I think now people want to do this for the wrong reasons. And I think that's when they get swallowed up, you know, and if you have to ask for advice, maybe you shouldn't do it. For me, I did it because all my family, like literally my stepdad, my three sisters, they're all doctors. I didn't grow up in that kind of household. Like, work hard, whatever you do, be the best at it. And then we'll talk about it later. And that was kind of my upbringing. So for me, it was like, I did this because I had to, you know, I didn't do anything else. Well, if I was doing something else, I was thinking about music or I was writing something or, you know, it was always something else. So it wasn't, I always tell people, like, if you have to ask, don't ask for permission.
Yeah, that's great advice. We've got Khalees in the studio here on Sound Opinions with a band, six-piece band. What are we going to hear next?
I'd like to play Floyd, actually. Yeah.
It's not that I'm ungrateful, I'm just a little bored. Sure, I'm self-sufficient, blah, blah, independent. Truthfully, I got some space, I want a man to fill it. Don't need another friend, let's say for instance. And as a rule, I don't believe, don't do long distance. So I'm looking for a sailor or an awesome expert. Someone I can tell, say, away.
Floyd from Kalise Rogers and her band.
We've been in the studio with Kalise and her band, and it's been a real treat. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been amazing.
See videos of Kalise and her band. Visit us at soundopinions.org. And speaking of milkshakes, tell us about the relationship between music and food. Are chefs the new rock stars? And which rock star would you like to have cook for you? Call 888-859-1800. Coming up, Spoon's Britt Daniels says, "They want my soul."
You welcome more life's tricks. So eat the peach, spit out the pig.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And that's a song called They Want My Soul, the title track to the 8th album from Spoon. Greg, it's kind of hard to believe that this band has been going 20 years since forming, essentially around singer-guitarist Britt Daniel and drummer Jim Eno. What a cool name. Back in 1994 in Austin, Texas. They've had a long career. They've been in the indie ranks and then jumped to a major, Elektra Records, during the alternative rock feeding frenzy. Then went back to the indies, doing a lot of good work for Merge. And now they're back on the Universal distributed Loma Vista label, which I suppose puts them back in the major label ranks. This record is coming after a 4-year break. Britt Daniel, you may recall, had a side project during those 4 years off with Dan Beckner of Wolf Parade. That band was called Divine Fits. They were guests on Sound Opinions. Jim Eno, not Brian, was off producing other bands. Now the group has reconvened. They originally started with Dave Ciccarelli, but soon moved up to Fredonia, New York, the home of the studio of Dave Fridman, best known for the Flaming Lips. What have they come out with? We're going to play a track and we'll come back and we'll give our opinions. This is called Rainy Taxi by Spoon from They Want My Soul on Sound Opinions.
You catch everything that never could. You believed when I gave up for good. And when you stared beside me, I could tell I'm stronger than I've ever been. But if you're gone, you know you don't come back.
That is Rainy Taxi from the new Spoon album, They Want My Soul. You know, Jim, over the 20 years, this band has developed a sound that I think has become like a signature for them. It's very pithy. There's almost a cool remove there. You know, they're arty minimalists. The word minimalism keeps being thrown at them. And I think they do it very well. They don't waste any notes. And sometimes people say, well, they don't waste any emotions either. You know, I don't really know what Britt Daniel's thinking. But on this album, the tone of his voice and the singing, the quality of his singing, I think it's grown over the years. And I think what we're really hearing here is Britt Daniel developing as kind of an indie rock soul singer. I think Inside Out is unlike any other song they've ever done in that sense of fragility that he brings to that particular track.
There's intense gravity in you. There's intense gravity in you. I'm just your satellite.
I think you can also hear that tone in Daniel's voice in a track like Do You, or that cover of I Just Don't Understand, that early 60s pop standard that the Beatles did. A couple other keys here besides Daniel singing. Alex Fischel is now a full member of the band. He was with Daniel in Divine Fits. I think those keyboards are a big part of this record. You mentioned Joe Ciccarelli and Dave Fridman producing this record. I think they bring some new touches on a track like Outlier. So even though it's Spoon as we know it, doing those acclaimed things Spoon does, there are some new twists in here. And I think it's a real growth record for Spoon. It's a buy-it record for me.
I absolutely agree that this is a buy-it record, Greg. It might even be my favorite Spoon record after Ga 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 Ga. But like every other rock critic in the universe, you are making the classic mistake, even when praising Spoon, of not giving credit to Jim Eno. This guy is one of the best drummers in rock and roll. The grooves here range from kind of quiet, reworked Motown to just insistent pulsing to a sort of take on new wave, new order, 80s dance grooves. This is a great dance record, and he is this guy's MVP. He's the one other constant with Daniel from the beginning of the band. A lot of attention to Fridman. He makes things sound Flaming Lips-like. A lot of attention to Alex Frischel doing a lot of cool atmospheric additions. But Spoon ain't Spoon without Jim Eno. So a double buy-it from the two of us, but we want to know what you think. You can stream Spoon's new album by following Sound Opinions on Beats Music, and you can give us a call and give us your review. 888-859-1800.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
You remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible here on Sound Opinions, one of us likes to take a trip to the desert island and play you a tune on the jukebox that we just cannot live without. Mr. Cott, your turn. I'm eager to hear what you got.
Jim, thank you. I'm eager to pay tribute to Mabon Lewis Hodges, otherwise known as Teenie Hodges. We didn't really get a chance to pay tribute to Teenie when he died in June at the age of 68, complications of emphysema. But I did want to mention him because I think you mentioned Jim Eno in relationship to that Spoon record as sort of being an unsung hero. And I think Teenie Hodges was one of the unsung heroes of great Memphis music, especially from the 70s. He was Al Green's right-hand man. And you can't get any higher in my book than Al Green's right-hand man. I happened to see him a few weeks before he went to the hospital. I was in Memphis and happened to stop into High Studios to watch a recording session, and Teenie Hodges was the first person I saw, and he greeted me like a long-lost friend, even though we'd never actually met before. But I told him how much his music meant to me, and he was participating in a session even then. A few weeks later, lo and behold, he's in the hospital, and a few weeks after that, he's dead. So that may have been one of his last recording sessions. His work with Green in the 70s was essential, and the track I want to highlight is Love and Happiness. He co-wrote that track with Green, in addition to many others, most famously Take Me to the River. But on Love and Happiness, everything's there that made Teenie so vital to Al Green's vocals and arranging and songwriting. You can hear Teenie counting off the song at the start. by tapping his foot on a piece of cardboard in the studio. And then that guitar riff. I mean, you talk about iconic guitar riffs. The opening guitar riff of Love and Happiness by Teenie Hodges really sets the song off, and it builds from this kind of low-temperature opening. And Al Green said it was like a fever that just kept getting hotter and hotter as the song progressed, the band building behind them, behind that great riff that opens the song. It's Teenie Hodges and Al Green at their best on Love and Happiness from 1972 on Sound Opinions.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, talking about how she can make it right. Yeah, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone. Yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and Happiness by the Reverend Al Green and Teenie Hodges, Greg's Desert Island Jukebox pick. What do we have on the show next week?
Jim, next week we're going to listen to some opera. Not classical opera, but the best rock operas of all time.
Thanks to Adam Yaffe for recording Khalees. Sound Opinions was produced by senior producers Robin Lynn and Jason Saldana, our production assistant Anthony Martinez, and our intern Sam Taylor.
Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
Operator, oh, could you help me place this call? See
the new messages.
My name is Ted Youson, and I'm calling on Sunday, August 3rd, 2014, from the Chicago suburb of Skokie. And I wanted to log the call in with you before Lollapalooza ends tonight. So it's a great festival for those who attend. Urban setting, Chicago music history, most of the time looking out on the weather, fans having a great time connecting with musicians and other fans, and even catching a few really big names. My reason for the call, though, is to make an observation. You guys are the critics, so I'm not going there, but my observation is that there's this generic aspect to a number of the bands that perform, and I'm in no way criticizing the individual talent, energy, etc. maybe Pushing the Envelope happens in Austin or even at Pitchfork, but I just don't get that same vibe with Lala. So do you guys sense this? Thanks for your great shows.
Did not take to analysis, so I had to make up my mind and hold it for a while. I would not just leave you without a kiss.
Hey guys, this is Ken Parker from Orange County in New York State. I wanted to make a quick comment about the Roseanne Cash show. I thought it was a great show. The interview was terrific. And I've always thought that she would do well by doing a duet with Pat Denizio of the Smithereens.
I'm growing tired of the big city lights, tired of the glamour and tired.
The reason I say that is if you listen to the way both of them sing, they both sort of have that little dramatic flair at the end of their voice when they hold a note a little longer than what's in the rest of the song. If you pair the two of them together, listen to a couple of their songs, a couple of Smithereen songs, a couple of Roseanne Cash songs, and compare the way they sing, you'll hear that as they sort of trail off on a note. So anyway, I guess one of my wishes was that the two of them would always come together and do a song together. Probably not likely, but if they're listening, maybe one of them can call the other and do a song. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Hi, this is Anne from Chicago. I loved your piece on Ramones. One of the best experiences of my life was going to a Ramones concert in probably 78 or 79 in a bar in Schaumburg, Illinois. I was 16 or 17 years old to sneak in there to see the Ramones play and got a coveted guitar pick from Dee Dee. It just kind of changed my life, and I think changed the trajectory of my life coming from a small town in Illinois. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
David Spitzer from Columbia, Tennessee. Just wanted to say that, you know, I never really cared much for the Ramones as a group personally, but their influence all the way throughout the 80s era music, which is what I liked mostly, undeniable. You don't have to like the Ramones to like their influence around other music. Thank you.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.